This story is one of a series of 10 stories of missing experience that are comprised from narrative interviews with adults who've been reported as missing and who have returned and who contributed to the ESRC-funded Geographies of Missing People research project.
Out of the blue, my girlfriend told me that she didn't want me anymore, and things happened after that. It was quite traumatic for me, and it really shook me up because we were both doing well in work, and financially we were pretty settled, no worries there. So, you think of revenge. Now, I'm not that sort of person normally, but I wanted to feel better, and disappearing was it for me. It was totally out of character, and I liked that. I knew that she wouldn't expect it and wouldn't know where I was, and I thought it would get me time and space. 2 weeks before I disappeared, I had looked up on the web how to lose your identity, how to disappear. There are a few things it tells you. You move to a small town, you get work locally, establish yourself and then move on. And do that once more and you're almost untraceable. You'd be living a happy life in another place or even the other side of the country, having changed your name, and they would find it very difficult to track you. I now know of people who've had no correspondence with their wife or their children in 15 years after something like this happened, and there's a lot you can do to disappear. I considered that, but it would have been mean on the kids. It would have been tough because they're young, but they could have joined me themselves later as I would have been established by then. I've got a friend who was in Canada and then travelling. He was on Facebook and I'm saying to him, everything's gone wrong here. I've got to get out. I need some space. Going was really for me to clear my mind and get some space. I had an idea about being in a warm spot. No ties, no getting up in the morning, not doing anything, and looking after myself a little bit. What I decided was I would start to draw money out from the bank. £50 here, £40 there, £100 here, £200 there, bits and bobs. Take a bit out of the savings, pay for my flight without it showing up as a single payment. Anyone looking at my bank statement would know where I was. They would see a singular flight via Amsterdam or whatever it may have been. Oh, look, looks like he's gone there. I booked my flight a week beforehand. I didn't speak to anybody at work except to one of my close mates, Mick. I said I was going out and see Jake, so he knew where I was going. I booked my car in via his credit card for something like 23 days, you know, and a long stay car park at the airport. I felt very guilty, as you do, and it put me quite emotionally on the edge, and you have to concentrate on what you're doing. Everything was quite premeditated. I'd packed a few days beforehand. I made it as easy for myself as I possibly could. And all the tools for my disappearance were there. The flight, the car booked in safely. And all the money that I'd got for spending money went on another card, a travel card. So Sunday night came and it was a terrible time. And I ended up getting more and more nervous, but I only had 2 drinks. I wasn't sure if I was going or not that night. I went for a walk round the block with my daughter and I tried to explain to her without giving anything away. I told her, no matter where I am now or in the future, I'll be okay and I'll be thinking of her and her sister. She's a smart kid and seemed to understand. I spoke to my friend from work that night too. I tell him, if I'm not here in the morning, you know where I've gone. And he tells me, that's no problem. The message I left for my friend was, if she rings you, texts you or gets in contact with you, don't tell her where I'm going. Just tell her that I'm fine and having a few days away. I just wanted to disappear. And he understood. So I'd covered that. It was meant to be a bit of a shock to her. I still wasn't sure I was going to do it because I've never done anything like that. I did feel guilty, but you have to cut yourself off to get on with it. I woke up about a minute before the alarm. I cleaned my teeth and washed my face and got all my gear on. My bag was packed and hidden in the car. Take what you need and nothing more. I had my passport, which she obviously thought was still in one of the cabinets at the house. I'd taken that on the day that I booked my visa and everything, and she had no idea. I crept out of the house, locked the door, got into my car and drove round to the airport. Found a parking place and got the shuttle. I was totally wired. Felt very strange. One person, my friend at work, had my phone number and I left my current phone switched off in the boot of the car at the airport. The old phone is the one I used with the phone number that I'd had from a couple of years previously. My mate topped up for me while I was away. The flight felt like I was flying to the moon, not as if I was detaching from my life in the UK, but wasn't as simple as that. I tried to sleep in the plane, but I've had dreams of home and wondering if what I'm doing is right and if she has found out yet. Things were going on in my head. I arrived exhausted from the flight and emotionally exhausted too. I called Jake and I made my way to his and we went out for a drink and I was shot. We didn't talk about anything, I was too exhausted. I texted my mate and told him I'd arrived and he told me, you know, she's contacted me a few times and I've kept it vague. It would have been a completely fresh start. It would have been very sad for my dad and my mum. I mean, they'd be sad not to have contact. I would have liked to have just set myself up again in another place as just a guy down the road and just start rebuilding my life. The aim was to live my life without the complications. I mean, I hadn't told my parents that I was going to go away because I didn't want to involve them. And they know I'm quite bulletproof and I didn't want to involve them in this. I know Vancouver really well, so I knew how to get about. And over the next few days, I went to look at a few places, firms that I know of and had mild dealings with on a previous trip. I was scoping things out, and so that was a possibility. I'd actually flown out with what I needed to become sponsor and stay. I could have changed my visa into a working visa while I was there. I think I could have anyway. I was beginning to unwind in Vancouver, a place I'm familiar with, but it didn't matter where I was, as I couldn't really take it in. I was constantly thinking of home and what was going on there rather than the surroundings. I was getting reports from Mick saying that she had gone ballistic and reported me missing. He got something like 38 texts one day and she wouldn't stop. I decided to go onto Facebook to see what was happening. I still had my daughter as a friend, and I told her I was going to have to unfriend her because of her mum. I did feel guilty, but I really needed some space to clear my head. So, I've got all that going on, and Vancouver was starting to be stressful. It was nice seeing Jake, but it wasn't the time out I wanted. And I thought about going somewhere else, but I didn't know if that would be a risk of flying because of your passport and your name and a global identity. So I decided to rent a Jeep and I drove out of the city towards Whistler. I was just trying to relax. I went for walks and tried to relax in bars, focus on magazines and have something to eat. I think I needed to keep myself occupied. On one of the evenings, I got back to the hotel and there was a voicemail from my friend saying my brother had been taken into hospital. Seriously, oh. Well, I couldn't ignore that. And so I called to find out, and it was serious, so I had to go home. I was in such a daze, but knew I had no choice, so I booked a flight. The journey back wasn't good. It makes you physically ill, I can tell you, being lonely, anxious and angry. No, what am I going to say to work? I felt really sad. I never really got what should have been a good time to clear my head and it never really happened. When I got back, it was very hard to try and put it into a picture that someone might understand. The phone that was in the boot of my car, when I fired that up, there was 5 voicemails in the phone from my sister. Then the phone rang, and it was the girlfriend, and she went mad. She was swearing at me down the phone. I headed to my parents rather than home, but I don't really remember much else. It was catastrophic, really. When I was back in the UK, because I'd been reported missing, I was told I needed to go to the local police station. I showed them a bill that had my name on it and a driving licence that had my face on it, and they were fine. They chatted for a few minutes. There was no interview as such. They just wanted to see a face at the door, some forms of ID. The police were good about it. They weren't annoyed. What I needed was just my own personal space. And yet, I ended up with more problems than I would have done if I hadn't gone. Life is just rebuilding itself, but it seems quite odd to have been on a missing persons list. When you come back, you have a load of things that you may not want to face, which could be a good reason not to come back. Quite daunting. That pressure is not what someone who disappears wants to have when they come back. What they want is not family, but a neutral person, an ear, or someone to speak to. I never, ever talked to anybody about it, but you need someone who's interested, and I think that is quite important. There are 100 versions of what might be wrong and why you go, and you may be simply one of those people who need some space when things get too much. You don't do this for no good reason.